honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and this special tribute episode honoring Pearl Harbor survivor Stu Headley, one of those men who, if you ever met him, you just couldn't imagine a day where he wasn't here anymore. Just so resilient, so spirited, so passionate about keeping the history of Pearl Harbor alive. Stu finished his journey on Earth just a few months shy of his 100th birthday. After a memorial service aboard the USS Midway Museum on August 25th, he'll be buried at Miramar National Cemetery next to his late wife, Wanda. Let's resume Stu's story now on December 7th, 1941. After escaping the severely damaged USS West Virginia, he was helping to treat the wounded on Ford Island at a dispensary clearly marked with a big red cross. But Japanese planes ignored that cross and bombed it anyway.
Dust flew all over everywhere, and I would say it was about 5 to 7, 8 minutes later that the dust cleared away. We looked over the banister. We didn't see a speck of red anywhere. Just literally tore that whole thing and turned it upside down.
The cross was gone.
Gone.
What about the patients that you guys had been treating?
They were still on the beds, but glass was all over them and everything. And there were about, I'd say pretty close to 50 to 100 fellows that were helping. They grabbed everybody they could, even those that were on Ford Island or those that came in off the ships.
Like you guys.
Yeah. It's about 9:45. They told us, you're needed back aboard ship to help fight fire. So they put us in a boat, took us back to our ship, and aboard the West Virginia, we had just gotten a new captain, Captain Benyon, and a new executive officer, Helen Cotter. And as soon as I got on the ship, the chief told me, Headley, you're going to handle the hose with the exec. He's going to handle the nozzle. You're going to hold the hose. When he cracked the hatch to the 3rd Division compartment, boom, boom. And I thought the Japanese are back, but it wasn't. The heat was so intense in the compartment that the moment he cracked that hatch and the air went in, it blew out our portholes. Took 45 minutes to cool that compartment down. And when we got it cooled down, I said, Commander, could I check my locker? He said, where's your locker, son? I said, right there in the corner. Go right ahead. I opened up my locker. There's my blues, my dungarees, my whites, my underclothes, my socks, a pair of shoes, my pea coat, a sweater, my hats. All stowed away just as neat as anything. But the minute I touched them, they turned to powder from the heat. And it was amazing because I opened up the drawer and the stupidest thing, instead of sending my photographs home with the negatives, that locker drawer was just one mass of goo. Everything was gone. So then I opened the bottom drawer, and I had a pearl buckle in there because I was making square knot belts out of Belfast cord. And there was a half penny. Now, the story about the half penny goes back to October the 11th. The battleship Warspite, British battleship Warspite, came into port. They volunteered a group of us sailors to go over and mingle. And I was assigned to this British sailor, and he said, you know, he said, I don't have much that I could give you, but come on down to my locker and we'll see what I can find. So he took out this half penny, and he said, I'll give you this. And he said, you know, you'll be in this war right alongside of us before long. I said, no. I said, we'll send you planes and tanks and ammunition, but... And I thought to myself, what a prophecy when I saw that half penny.
You know, you've described all this, and I know you've told your story hundreds of times, if not thousands of times. And I can't imagine how many lives have been impacted by your willingness to tell this story. But I'm struck by how much detail you remember. And the one thing I'm trying to figure out is how. How did you do all this? How did you manage to keep on going? And how terrified were you with this situation that nothing could have prepared you for?
Yes, there was a preparation. Because, see, we were out there a whole year before the attack. And we had battle drills. We had gun drills. We had man overboard drills. We had all kinds of drills that we were continuously practicing. So when the real thing happened, we're prepared and we do just what we're trained to do.
But
and
Stu,
you don't stop. And
but Stu, you saw bodies flying through the air. Then your body was blown back 8 feet. And you're holding your breath underwater because there's fire on the top. And you get to the beach. And when you get there, there's all these guys who are injured and maimed and dying. And you're treating them only to get bombed again where you're treating them. I mean, how can anything prepare you for that? And what was it that... Yeah, that was it.
The Lord prepared me for everything. He assured me, I will never leave you nor forsake you. I will be with you whatever you go through. That was where my faith was and my trust. That was all during the war. I went through 13 major engagements aboard the next ship, the San Francisco. The biggest battle we were in was Guadalcanal. Our ship was literally demolished. Eddie Huber and I were with damage control. We were electricians. Mm-hmm. We were assigned to go up and take over Gun 6. He was going to be the trainer. I was going to be the pointer. Gun 6 is the only gun that didn't get demolished. Gun 1, Gun 3, Gun 5, and 7 on the starboard side all took 14-inch shell hits. Gun 2, Gun 4, Gun 8 were wiped out. While we were on Gun 6, Gun 4 was destroyed. Joe Hubbard, who was our senior damage control officer, was walking on the deck behind us. When Gun 4 got hit, a piece of the shrapnel of the blast shield took his head right off his shoulders. Oh. He walked about 8 steps and then collapsed and died. We had 75% of our officers killed in 45 minutes aboard that ship. The admiral was killed. The captain was killed. The executive officer was killed. The gun boss was killed. Joe Hubbard, damage control officer, he was killed. We had 236 died that night. And the next morning, I was asked to help identify bodies. Well, we had a dog tag, two of them, on a chain around our neck. So I told Dr. Momonas, I'll gladly do that for you. So I started with Gun 7, 5 bodies. And I opened their mouth, put the dog tag between their teeth, clamped their jaws shut, put a red tag on them. I come up to Gun 5. This is the most horrible experience of my life. I told you about Johnny Anderson, who was in that boat when he saw the torpedo wake, and he was supposed to have been in turret 3 in the left gun, but he wasn't there. Well, he was a pointer on this 5-inch 25, and the shell came right through and tore him in half. His head and shoulders were underneath the vent. His lower torso and legs were dangling. I started laughing, and Dr. Momonas doubled up his fist and hit me as solid as he could in the jaw. And he said, Headley, you have every right to report me because an officer has no authority to strike an enlisted man. But if I hadn't have done it, you would have gone stark raving mad. Snap me out of it. I went ahead and continued identifying bodies up the starboard side and down the port. And shortly after, fellow said, Headley, how about taking the watch in Central Station? This is about 10:30 in the morning, and I've got the JA phones on, and all of a sudden I hear 3 torpedo wakes on our port bow. I went up 5 flights of ladders, 5 decks, hit topside. Don Jenkins, first-class electrician, said, Stu, who's in Central Station? I said, no one. He went right down. Those 3 torpedoes passed between the Helena and the Frisco and hit the Juno. And in 9 seconds, clocked on our chronometer in the bridge, there was no ship afloat. Wiped right out. Turret 1 or Turret 2 was spinning through the atmosphere. And Hoover, who was a senior officer on board the Helena, was not about to stop to pick up any survivors because the Frisco could make 8 knots. We were heavily damaged. So we proceeded right on to Espirito Santo's. When we got in there, Hoover got a reprimand from Halsey like nothing for not attempting to pick up some of the men. But he told him, he said, I knew there was a submarine in the area. And he said, if I had dallied trying to get them, they could have picked us up.
Which would happen a little bit later on. That ship was sunk as well.
Yep. Well, we had 5 Medal of Honors awarded in one night aboard our ship. Admiral Callahan, Captain Casson Young, Commander Shonlin, Commander McCandless, and Robert Kepler, first class boatswain mate. And on my hat here is the Presidential Unit Citation. We were the first ship in the fleet to get that. I stayed on the Frisco and went through the Battle of Atuinkiska.
Way up in the Aleutians.
Yep, from the southern tip down in Guadalcanal, the Coral Sea Battle, the Battle of Rabaul, the Battle of New Guinea, the Battle of Bougainville. Then we go into the North Pacific. And when we finished the campaign at Kiska and Attu, they sent us over into the Bering Sea. Mm-hmm. In between Alaska and Russia. That's when we went up through the Arctic Circle, and we all become Blue Nose. But we were in water with waves 110 feet high, and we were in the trough. We took a 57.5-degree roll. Captain France, who was a new skipper that we picked up in Frisco, was scared stiff, and he passed the word over the loudspeaker, all hands put on life jackets. That's engine room, pump rooms, deck fours, everybody. He announced that he was going to attempt to bring the ship about into the waves so that we would not be rolling with them, but we would be pitching. And when the Salt Lake City was alongside of us, when she went down by the bow, all 4 of her screws are out in the atmosphere going. And that was the same way with us. And I heard the creaking of the ship, you know.
Sure.
And I thought, sure, we're going to break in half. And the chief told me, he said, Stu, don't worry about it. We have expansion braces for that very thing of allowing the ship to roll and pitch. So when we left the area of the Bering Sea in September, in October, we were in the Battle of Wake Island, and we recaptured Wake Island.
And sent a lot of prisoners free.
Yep. And when I got back to Pearl, I was supposed to go to new construction, but I wanted to stay in Pearl. I had a girlfriend there. Well, what happened was I ran into a fellow over at the receiving station who had orders for Pearl Harbor, but he didn't want to stay there. So I asked him, I said, would you be willing to go to the captain and see if we could get our orders changed? He said, would you go before the captain? I said, sure. So he said, all right, if you go, I'll go. So we went up, and I asked the captain, I said, this fellow here has orders to stay here in Pearl, but he doesn't want to. I have orders for new construction, and I don't want to go back. I want to stay here. Well, he was a second-class electrician, 2 hash marks. I'm a second-class electrician, 2 hash marks. And so he said, I don't see why we can't just verbally change your orders. So I got to stay in Pearl, and he went back to new construction.
There's a million questions I'd love to ask you, but I think a real important one is, why do you tell your story? Why do you go to these different groups? What is it that you're hoping people will understand and remember?
Well, I'll put it this way. It relates to our motto, remember Pearl Harbor, keep America alert. America is asleep. It has been ever since the beginning of World War II. Just to give you an example, 95% of the people of our country don't know what our boys went through.
Any of us who ever had the privilege of listening to Stu Headley gained a little better understanding of that. Stu once estimated that he had shared his story with more than 200,000 people. But that's just in person. When you factor in interviews like this one and others, I'm sure that number is far greater. His passion to honor his fellow veterans, and especially to remember Pearl Harbor and keep America alert, will not be forgotten. Again, that public memorial for the one and only Stu Headley will be August 25th at 9 a.m. in San Diego aboard the USS Midway, always one of Stu's favorite places. Thanks for listening to this special edition of Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.